I think there's probably been a time in all of our lives, with the exception of maybe a few who were born in this country, of feeling like, wow, you know, life is tough. I'm not in my home country. These people don't speak my home language. And I've just had a lot of hardships in my life. Have you ever felt that way? Be honest. You've felt that way, haven't you? At times. And maybe even those who have been are born in this country, doesn't mean you've been without problems and difficulties. And I think in those times we are tempted to think, but I'm trying my best to serve the Lord. What have I done wrong? Why is God punishing me? Why am I having to go through this? Well, I am beginning a series today, and you have the sheet there. It gives you all five of the titles, at least in the scriptures. I hope you'll take time to read those ahead of time. And you already have that, so you know who I'm going to be talking about. But here is a servant, a chosen servant of God, who was hated even by his own brothers. He was sold as a slave by his brothers. He wasn't captured and carried away and sold as a slave. His own brothers sold him. He was lied about. He was falsely accused when he was doing his very best. In fact, because he did the right thing, he was accused of doing the wrong thing, wrongfully jailed. And in the jail, again, trying to do his best, helping out people, he was forgotten, even by those he helped. Does that sound like a person that God loves? Does that sound like a person that loves God and is trying to do the right thing? Well, it is a person that is loved by God. It is the person of Joseph in the Old Testament. And we want to look at his life. And you'll note, if you ever look at these things, that it's a little bit different today. I didn't give you my whole outline. Instead, I gave you some questions. I hope, I pray that you will take time sometime this week to think seriously about those questions and to think about the life of Joseph. Because the Old Testament, we are informed in the New Testament that all of these things have been recorded as an example for us. And that there are things that we can learn from Old Testament characters. And Joseph is one of my favorites. I think Gideon has to be my all-time favorite, but Joseph is up there. We can learn things about God and about ourselves. And so I trust that you will take time to look at that, because we are going to look at the life of Joseph. And when you think of looking at the life of Joseph, you need to realize that it wasn't an isolated life. It was in the plan of God. And so you really have to go back to his great-grandfather. His great-grandfather, Abram, was living his life as best he could, and God said, I want you to go to another land. And in fact, I'm not even going to tell you where you're supposed to go. Just follow me. And he did. And we know him as Abraham because God made a covenant with him. And God changed his name from a father to a father of nations. And you know the story of Abraham a little bit. You know that he moved his household. He made one little mistake, took his nephew with him, caused problems later on. When you don't obey God fully, sometimes you have to face the consequences. But he moved to a land that he did not know, but God said, this will be your land, and I'm going to make out of you a great nation. Now, it wasn't just that he was going to be a great father of nations. It was the beginning of the specific lineage of Jesus Christ. Through this nation, all the families of the earth will be blessed. You know that it was a difficult time. There was times that he had to wait and wait and wait upon the Lord. The Lord said, I'm going to bless you. And he said, but Lord, I don't even have a son. I don't have a child. How can you bless me and make me the father of nations? And he tried to take things in his own hands. I could blame that on his wife, but I won't. You know, you ladies would be upset at me. But that didn't work. Finally, God, 25 years after he promised him a son, brought a son. And that son, I love his name. They called him Laughter. Isaac means laughter, because they both kind of laughed at the thought of having a child when they were so old. And you know the problems that his grandfather, Isaac, went through. And there was two sons. And God chose the one that was the younger son over the older son. But Jacob was not satisfied, and Jacob's mother was not satisfied with just that. He wanted everything. And so Jacob and his mother deceived the father, and he got his brother's birthright. And when his father died, he was fearful that his brother would put him to death. And so he ran away. And that's kind of where you pick up the story of Joseph, because you have to go with his father to another land. And there, his father fell in love with a beautiful girl and worked 7 years so that he could marry that girl. You guys think you're putting out a lot of sacrifice. 7 years he worked. And then he was deceived. And he was given the wrong girl. And I won't go into how that happened. But he said, okay, I'll work 7 more years. 14 years he worked for his wife that he loved. 14 years waiting. And then, as time went on, his first wife and the two handmaids had 10 children, but the wife that he loved, the wife that he worked 14 years for, did not have any children. Finally, in his older age, she had a son, and that son was Joseph. And so that's where we want to begin. And you can imagine why Jacob favored Joseph. He had worked 14 years for the one he loved. He had waited patiently, and now a son is finally born. And he favored that son. And that's what we want to pick up in chapter 37. I don't want to just tell you this, right? I want you to hear it. Follow along, if you will. But in chapter 37, we pick up the story of Jacob. We find some things about him. They moved around a lot when he was small. There's some other things that became difficult in his life, and we'll get to those in a minute. But I want to read some of the scripture to you. Chapter 37 of Genesis, beginning with verse 1. So Jacob settled again in the land of Cana, where his father had lived as a foreigner. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, okay, so he's 17 now, he often tended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers and sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. And Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children, because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. And they couldn't say a kind word to him. One night, Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him even more. Listen to this dream, he said. We were out in the field, tying up bundles of grain, and suddenly my bundle stood up, and your bundles all gathered around and bowed down before mine. That would cause anyone to be a little upset, I think, okay? So Joseph had another dream, and he said to his brothers about it, listen, I've had another dream. You can imagine how delighted they were to hear the second dream. You know, oh, good, tell us your second dream. He said, in this dream, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed down to me. This time, he told the dream to his father as well as to his brothers, but his father scolded him. What kind of dream is that? He asked. Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dreams meant. Soon after this, Joseph's brothers went to pasture their father's flocks at Shechem. And when they had been gone for some time, Jacob said to Joseph, "Your brothers are pasturing the sheep at Shechem. Get ready, and I will send you to them." "I'm ready to go," Joseph replied. "Go and see how your brothers and the flocks are getting along," Jacob said. "Then come back and bring me a report." So Jacob sent him on his way, and Joseph traveled to Shechem from their home in the valley of Hebron. And when he arrived there, a man from the area noticed him wandering around the countryside. "What are you looking for?" he asked. "I'm looking for my brothers," Joseph replied. Do you know where they are pasturing their sheep?" "Yes," the man told him. "They have moved on from here, but I heard them say, 'Let's go on to Dothan.'" So Joseph followed his brothers to Dothan and found them there. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. And as he approached, they made plans to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said. "Come on, let's kill him and throw him in one of these cisterns, and we can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. And then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." But when Reuben would be the firstborn, the oldest, heard of their scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. "Let's not kill him," he said. "Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him in one of the empty cisterns here in the wilderness. Then he will die without us laying a hand on him." Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe that he was wearing. They grabbed him, threw him into a cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And then, just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming toward them. It was a group of Ishmaelite traders taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead down to Egypt. And I would love to spend time talking about why, how important it was that these were Ishmaelites, but you'll have to go back and look and see who Ishmael was and who the Ishmaelites were on your own. If you need some help, I'll give you some aid on that. Joseph said to his brothers, Judah said to his brothers, not Joseph, "What will we gain by killing our brother? We have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. And so when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. Later, as we read in the story of Joseph, you read that they were haunted by his cries and screams for mercy. It doesn't show up here, but it shows up later. It rang in their ears for years after that, him pleading with them not to sell him. But they did. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver. We hear that figure again, the price of a slave. When Jesus Christ was betrayed, is the price of a slave. And the traders took him to Egypt. Sometime later, Reuben was not there when this all took place, returned to get Joseph out of the cistern. And when he discovered that Joseph was missing, he tore his clothes in grief. And then he went back to his brothers and lamented, "The boy is gone. What will I do now?" Then the brothers killed a young goat, dipped Joseph's robe in the blood, and they sent the beautiful robe to their father with this message: "Look at what we found. Does this robe belong to your son?" Their father recognized it immediately. "Yes," he said, "this is my son's robe. A wild animal must have eaten him." Joseph was clearly been torn to pieces. And then Jacob tore his clothes and dressed himself in burlap. And he mourned deeply for his son for a long time. His family tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "I will go to my grave mourning for my son," he would say, and then he would weep. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt, where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. So that's as much as the story as we want to get at this time. And we look at the life of Joseph. We've already looked at his heritage coming down. But there's some characteristics we notice about him. We notice that he was a responsible young man, 17 years old, but he was worked as a shepherd. We notice that he knew what was right and what was wrong. He might not have been very smart to give a bad report about his brothers, but it was the right thing. He did the right things, and he gave a report. And that, of course, made his brothers very angry and hated him even more. We see that he was committed to the truth, committed to doing the right thing. We see that God gave him these dreams, and maybe the dreams should have been kept to himself. Maybe it was important that he have hope of a future. The Bible tells us that God says, I have a plan for you. And it's a good plan. It's a plan for a hope and a future. And every one of us needs that. We know that little babies, they need food and they need care. And once in a while they make messes. Is that right? You guys know about that. Yeah, they do. And you have to take care of them. But a number of research have been done and realized that children thrive not just because they have the right food and the right, they need hope, they need love. And here, God knew that Joseph was going to be going through some difficult waters, and so he gave him the dreams. Now, I don't think he made a mistake. It wasn't wise necessarily by telling his brothers, but later on, it was important for them to know that God had already had the plan. And that it wasn't just some happenstance, some strange thing that took place. So what were the problems in his life? First of all, there were problems at home. There were problems because he was the favored son. Now we can understand that a little bit because Jacob, his father, had waited so long for Rachel to have this son. As a young boy, they moved around a lot. They were shepherds, and they went. And even as you can tell from this story, they had to constantly be on the move to find pasture land. And they were moving around. When he was still a young boy, there was a tragic violence that came into his life. And you can go back to chapter 34 and read about it. But his sister was raped. His brothers attacked the city and killed all the men. Can you imagine the rage that was involved there? And that violence was a part of his past, too. He saw that take place. We see that great sorrow came to him because he was the firstborn from his mother, but there was a second son, Benjamin. But when Benjamin was born, his mother died. So by the time that we're reading about him in chapter 37, he doesn't have a mother anymore. He had great sorrow, and he was favored. So there was really problems in the home. There was problems by his son because they hated him because he was favored. They hated him because of the dreams that said that he was going to be above them. They hated him because of his coat of many colors. It was not only a nice gift, it was a sign of authority. His father had as much said to them, this one is going to be the favored son, and he will one day rule over you, and therefore he has this robe. And so they had already, they felt like, okay, we've been replaced. It seems like Reuben would have been the one that would really be upset because he was the firstborn. And he would think, oh, that's being stolen from me. It says very clearly that they were jealous of him. And so they had this plot to get rid of him. We see that his father sent him off to find his brothers, and Shechem was 2 days' journey away, so it wasn't like around the corner. And Dothan was another day's journey beyond that, so at least 3 days he's out looking for his brothers, and when they see him coming, it was pretty easy to see who it was because that beautiful coat that he was wearing. And they said, let's kill him. We're tired of this dreamer. Let's see what happens to his dreams now. But Reuben, the oldest one, who would have to answer to his father, who had a responsibility. That's kind of a characteristic of firstborns. How many firstborns do we have here? Quite a few. Responsible people. Lena knows that because every time something happened at her house, somebody said, she's responsible. Oh, no, they didn't do that. Her brothers wouldn't do that. But he was. Reuben felt like, okay, I'm the responsible one. I've got to save this boy. My brothers are being a little bit rash here. And so he said, no, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in the pit and let him die. Doesn't sound like a lot better plan, but he secretly, it says, planned to go back and get him out of the cistern and take him back to his father. But because they had various flocks that they were tending, apparently Reuben went off to take care of his flocks. And while he was gone, Judah took over and said, look, why should we kill him? Let's make a little money off the guy. And so they sold him to this caravan that was coming through. And when Reuben came back, he was distraught. What are we going to tell Father? What can we tell Father? And so they came up with a lie. And the lie involved killing an animal and putting the blood on the coat. And it's kind of interesting to note that there was a lie involved in Jacob's life. Do you remember what that was? He lied to his father. His father said, go out and find game and come back. He said that to Esau, his brother. And the mother and Jacob said, look, while he's out hunting, we'll kill an animal, we'll cook it up, and we'll fool your father. And his father was deceived by them. And now it's kind of coming back to haunt him, the same idea that now a animal was killed and he was lied to. But it says that Joseph was sold to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, captain of the guard. Now we need to remember that what I said at the beginning, that this was part of God's plan. And you say, well, wait a minute. How could this be part of God's plan if hatred and favoritism and selling a person to a slave, how is that part of God's plan? Well, we need to remember that God's plan is bigger than our thinking. We need to understand that God will do whatever he needs to do, not that he takes evil and puts it in. He even works around evil to fulfill his plan. What was his plan? His plan was that Abraham, the great-grandfather, was promised this land and was promised that God would bless his offspring. And he would establish a nation that would be the nation that would bring Jesus into the world. Later, in Genesis 15, another prophecy was given to Abraham. And it's kind of a strange one. If you're reading along, you say, okay, now God has promised him the land of Israel. And then in Genesis 15, maybe we should read those. Turn with me to Genesis 15 and look at verses 13 to 16. I'll start with 12. It says, as the sun was going down, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a terrifying darkness came over him. And the Lord said to Abram, you can be sure that your descendants will be strangers in a foreign land, well, they will be oppressed as slaves for 400 years. But I will punish the nation that enslaves them in the end, and they will come away with great wealth. And as for you, you will die in peace and be buried at a ripe old age. After four generations, your descendants will return here to this land, for the sins of the Amorites do not yet warrant their destruction. God said, look, I want to preserve this nation, and I can't destroy the people around because their wickedness is not enough. I'm not going to do away with them. I'm giving them a chance. But you and your descendants, in this case your descendants, because he said you will die and be buried, but your descendants will be captive in another land. He prophesied what would happen, that they would go to Egypt. And if you wonder, why would God send his chosen people into a land where they would become slaves? Because God wanted to preserve them. God wanted this nation not to intermingle with other nations. He wanted the line of Abraham to be pure. And when they moved to Egypt, guess what? The Egyptians despised them. and wanted nothing to do with them. And so it was very easy. No Egyptian was going to give their daughters to one of these Israelites, one of these Jacob followers. And so they lived there for 400 years. They did not intermarry with the Egyptians. God kept his promise to keep this nation separate and pure. And you say, wait a minute, are you just making that up? Is that just something you think might have happened? Turn with me to Psalm 105. And Psalm 105 is one of those songs that was given to Israel, to David later on. But it gives explanation for what was going on in history. And we won't take time to read the whole psalm, although all of it is very interesting. I want to pick up reading with verse 16. And it says, and it's giving the history of Israel. He called for a famine on the land of Cana, cutting off its food supply. And we'll run into that later in Joseph's life. Then he sent someone to Egypt ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with fetters and placed on his neck with an iron collar until there came the time of fulfillment of his dreams. The Lord tested Joseph's character. You say, well, yeah, but that was written after the fact. But yes, it was written after the fact, but it means that the people understood God was working out his plan. God had a plan for salvation for Israel. When the famine came, they would have all perished had not someone gone ahead into Egypt to prepare the way. God always protects his plan. An agent was needed in Egypt. Someone who would rise up and prepare and spare the life of the lineage that God had chosen. Joseph's life was spared. Remember, the brothers first wanted to kill him. Reuben stood up and said, no, let's not kill him. God's timing was perfect. Reuben was gone, and a caravan came by. And instead of killing, they sold him. They sold him to the right caravan, the caravan that was going to Egypt, the caravan that was going to have the opportunity to sell him to the right person. It was strategically placed that he would work for Potiphar, who was the leader, the king, the head. What's the right word? Captain. That's the word. He was the captain of the palace guard. He had to be placed in that home because he had to be placed in a certain prison. All of these things, God was preserving these things ahead. And it said in Psalm 105 that God tested him until the fulfillment of his dreams. When God gives you a dream, when God gives you a desire to serve him, you can be sure of one thing. It's going to be tested. It's going to be tested. Do you really trust me? Do you really believe me? Or are you just caught up in the circumstances around me, around you? Joseph was prepared with the dreams to have faith, to believe that God had a plan for him. I can imagine there were times along that journey when Joseph himself wondered, what in the world has happened to the dreams? When he was pleading with his brothers, don't sell me. Let me go. And you imagine the dream had to kind of come in his mind. I thought, Lord, what is this all about? How is this going to happen? But apparently, he held on to the dreams. Joseph was developed as a faithful, trustworthy worker before he was a leader. Important lesson, especially for young people. If you want to be a leader, learn to be a follower. If you want to do great things for God, learn to do little things for God. Learn to be faithful in the little task that you have. I am so pleased that so many of you sign up to be greeters at the door. And I think sometimes we would say, oh yeah, greeter at the door, what's that? That's the first face anybody sees of our congregation. And it often is the turning point, whether people want to feel at home here or will feel at home here or not. It's very important. Very important. If those people come to faith in Jesus Christ, it might be because you gave them that first handshake and said, welcome, we're glad for you to be here today. There's no little task in the plan of salvation and what is reaching out to people. Joseph developed as a trustworthy worker during these days. And we're going to see that as we go on in his life. But well, there's some lessons to learn from this first part. And then we'll be done. First of all, God has a plan. God has a plan. If we could just grasp that, God has a plan for every life. God has a plan that begins at creation, and it will end at the end of the world. His plan is going on today. His plan includes salvation for all who believe in Jesus Christ, and it includes eternity in heaven. His plan is not bound by the circumstances of this world. Some of you have gone through tough things in life. Some of you are young and you don't know what tough things you're going to face in life. There might be some very hard things. But all through that, you need to grasp onto the truth that God has a plan. And His plan is for your salvation. He's more interested in your salvation than He is in your comfort. Let me say that again. Because sometimes we don't like to hear that, but I want you to hear it. God is more interested in your salvation than He is in your comfort. Okay? He will do what He must. He will use what He must to bring you to that place of faith and for your faith to grow in Christ. Secondly, we need to understand that God allows evil. He doesn't approve of it. He allows it. We live in a fallen world. We live in a world that is tainted by sin. We live in a world where it says, where Jesus himself identified Satan as the prince of the power of the air. That we understand that we struggle not with flesh and blood, but with demons and powers and rulers of evil. He hates sin. God hates sin. He hates sins including favoritism in the home. Parents, be careful. If you have more than one child, be careful. That's a danger. He hates hatred among the brothers. That's not only in your family, but within the brothers and sisters in Christ. There are divisions. He hates divisions. He hates deception. He hates slavery. All of these things came into Joseph's life, not because God chose those things, but because he allowed those things and he brought Joseph through those. Third thing we need to understand is that God changes evil into good. God can change evil into good. Let me read for you the words of Joseph himself toward the end of his life in chapter 50 and verse 20. He said this to his brothers, "Don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so that I could save the lives of many people. You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good." God can take evil and turn it into good. We can trust God. When trouble comes, we can remember He's still on the throne. You say, well, wouldn't it be better if trouble just didn't come? Maybe not. Maybe not. I think I've told you before, but if not, I'll tell you again. Or if I did tell you, you can hear it again. When I was in college, when I was in university, planning to be a pastor, I took the pastoral training courses, different courses. There was an old man that lived on campus, and we always thought he was a pauper because he lived in a little trailer house on the edge of the campus. And we thought, oh, the campus is being so nice to him. They gave him this little place to live. And he would come to our classes. And we always kind of wondered. He would always sit in the back. Usually didn't say anything. But when he said something, it was always kind of a little word picture. And one day I remember him getting up and saying, "Smooth sails don't make good sailors." Well, then, good word. What do you think he's talking about, you know? And then later we would think about that and think, okay, if you're going to be a sailor that knows how to sail, and I am not, I can't even ride a horse. We have some people here that love riding horses, you know. Horses know that I'm afraid of horses, and they take over when I get on them. And they go where they want to go and do what they want to do. So I'm not even in that. But if you're going to accomplish something in life, you're going to have to take control. You're going to have to get through the hard times. And we need to understand that, I forgot to tell you about that man. Let me finish the story about the man. It turns out he wasn't a pauper at all. He owned about several thousand acres in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And if you know that area, it's a big tourist area. And he sold it, and he gave millions to the college. And he didn't want to live out in Jackson Hole by himself anymore, so he asked him if he could live on the edge of campus. And so he did. We never knew that story until later, that he was actually a very rich man that gave lots of money. He gave a third of his money to World Missions. He gave a third of his money to the college there. And he gave a third of his money to his church. He didn't need it, he said. Fourth lesson, I'll finish up here pretty soon. We can trust God. We can trust God. I love some of the sayings of Mother Teresa, and I'm going to read you one. You've probably read this before or heard this before, but let me read it to you. Because when things get tough, the character that we have comes through. And here's what she said. Because the truth of the matter is, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you're going to run up against people who hate you and who despise what you follow and will not follow you. I know that you've all heard of the tragedy in the state of Oregon. And you know, when you've lived close to a place, that kind of gets you a little closer. What the general media have not really publicized about that shooting was that young man asked people to stand up and ask them if they were Christians. And if they were Christians, he shot them in the head. He was there to kill Christians on that campus. I don't know if we'll face that. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. But the truth is that there are people who hate Christians, hate Christianity, and would like to put it down. Here's what Mother Teresa wrote. People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. When I was a young pastor in town I lived in, we were kind of on the highway going between a couple big cities, and people would always stop and say, "Oh, we're completely out of money. Can you give us some money to buy some gas?" And I never knew who to help and who not to help. And I was talking to an older pastor once, and he said, "Just plan it in your budget. Have some money to help people, even if they're lying to you." And it kind of helped me along the way. If you're honest and sincere, people will deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight. Create anyway. If you find sincerity and happiness, some will be jealous. Be happy anyway. I like that one. Christians ought to be happy. The good that you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. Give the best that you have, and it will never be enough. Give your best anyway. In the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. I like that. I like that. The final lesson, well, there's a couple I got here. One more is, when we can't see the light, that's when we need to trust more. When we're in a tough situation, that's when we need to lean into Jesus more, not pull back. That's when we need to trust His love. That's when we need to read His promises and hold on to them. That's when we need to trust in His timing. His timing. There are times that go along and we think, "God, why aren't you doing something?" And the truth is, he's working all along, and his timing is always perfect. We need to trust his plan for us. The fifth lesson is we need to put our lives in his hands. Put your lives in, life in his hands. That's apparently what Joseph determined early on in his life. I'm going to trust God. I'm going to do. And we're going to see, as we go on through the life of Joseph, we're going to see other lessons about him and about us. So take that sheet home and take time to look at those questions. What in your heritage shows God was preparing for you to serve him? If you're honest, you'll find in every life there were things that God brought into your life that maybe you didn't understand then, but now you're seeing how God's using them. Who showed you the love of God? How'd they do it? What characteristic is God developing in your life right now? He doesn't take pauses, by the way. You know, I remember, as a young pastor, I struggled. We just had a struggling little church, and my wife was supporting me and the church, basically, by working full-time. And I remember talking to an older pastor who was there, and I said, I think maybe I'm not cut out to be a pastor. And he said, why would you say that? And I said, well, it just seems like God's always working on something in my life, and whenever I get something a little bit right, it seems like he just puts his hand on something else. He finds something else that I need to work on. And his words were so powerful. He said, don't ever worry that God's working on something in your life. But if you ever come to a time where you think you've got it all together, you better get worried. You better worry then, because you're not listening. God is going to continue to work in your life. What difficulties did you face in your home? You know, I'm from a broken home. Some of you are from broken homes. Some of you are struggling with what happened. How did God work in those situations? Did you have struggles with your siblings? How have you overcome them? Have you ever felt betrayed by someone you love? I doubt if there's anybody here, because the children are gone, that hasn't felt betrayed by somebody you love. What was God doing in that time? How did you come through that? Are you aware that God has a plan for your life? Are you seeking it? How has God reached out to you? Have there been things in your life that seem terrible, but God has used them for your advantage? As we study the life of Joseph, I think we'll find answers to those questions. So I hope that you'll take time to contemplate them this week.